welcome to the Nerd Anti-Guardians of the Galaxy special. With me, I am one of your co-hosts, Professor Pepper. And with me, as always, are the impeccable Nikazumi.
I am not Groot.
And the loudly shouting Trey Dorn.
I am, in fact, so excited for this episode that I am not wearing pants. I am wearing shorts, but I am not wearing pants.
Well, it's very warm out. I cannot blame you for not wearing pants. I mean,
it's because I'm still in my PJs.
That's true. We are recording much earlier than we normally do, only because we're all really busy this evening. But so, guys, we of course, a movie that we've been hyping up for the past year, pretty much our first episode we talked about this, so it seems only fitting and right that we do a special episode entirely devoted to this movie, because I really think that we can't take just 10 minutes to talk about it. Guardians of the Galaxy came out on Thursday nationwide, unless you live in Janesville, and then it came out on Friday.
When it was supposed to.
When it was supposed to, right. Like I said, we've been excited for this movie ever since it was announced. We've been curious about this movie because, as I've been saying for the past year, I won't believe that Guardians of the Galaxy is actually happening until I'm sitting in theaters watching the movie.
And you did!
And we did. We all did. So why don't we start off the episode by going around and just giving our general thoughts about the movie, general reviews, and then we'll get into the meat of it. Trey, what did you think about Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, I have many thoughts. First, I do want to point out to the listeners at home that if you have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy, turn off this podcast immediately. We are going to spoil it like we spoil anything in our review episodes. So just turn it off. Put on Famicom Dojo. Eventually, their 100th episode will be out. You know, one of these weeks. Six weeks later.
Eat a cookie, do something. Just don't listen to this episode. Yeah. You know what? Instead, and actually, here's my suggestion. Why don't you go out and see Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes, do that.
Yeah, just go see the movie.
Go see the movie. If you're listening to this before seeing the movie, stop listening to this. Go see the movie, then listen to this.
If you're listening to this a year after we record this, go out and buy the movie and on DVD and Blu-ray or digital copy and watch it then. Because remember, this is amazing. We are in the future. And people could be listening to this 5 years from now.
I don't know why they would be.
Because they just watched Guardians of the Galaxy.
For the first time?
Hey, you know what? Every five-year-old's got to start sometime.
That's true.
All right, so my thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Now that we've gotten that spoiler thing out of the way.
Yeah, now I've gotten our spoiler warning out of the way. I thought it was pretty darned awesome, don't ya know? It was space opera, and I think we've been thoroughly lacking space opera that's not Star Wars or Star Trek for a long time, and I loved it. Action-packed, funny characters, well-written, and both, like, Star-Lord was a character who was both comedic, yet he had a soul to him. It felt like, I will admit, this film felt like there were too many Han Solos, but because every male lead except for Drax wanted to be Han Solo, and Groot, but even the bad guys wanted to be Han Solo with Yondu.
Space Merle.
Well, yeah, it's okay. So this is my one thing is it's like Yondu, Star-Lord, and Rocket all felt like they wanted to be Han Solo at the same time. And Rocket brought his own Chewbacca. So, but yeah, other than that, I can't really complain. Lee Pace was fantastic.
He was my sexuality throughout the whole movie. I'll be honest here. Like that, like my heart stopped when opening scene with him putting on the armor. And just get a glorious shot of Lee Pace's abs, and then they're, like, putting the tar on his face, and I'm like, oh, be still, my hearts.
Oh, God, you want sexy Lee Pace, watch Halt and Catch Fire, where he plays the bisexual Joe. He has sex with everything he can in that series.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, no, it's... Lee Pace is fantastic. Karen Gillan was really good. The whole cast was excellent. I have no complaints about it. Anybody in the cast, even Josh Brolin as Thanos. It's
wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like you might disagree there, Nick.
Oh no, no. I actually I want to build on what Trey said about the space opera thing. I have not felt this way about a movie since I first watched Star Wars, as in like the original Star Wars when I was like 4.
You get this feeling when you're watching this movie that you are, you know what it is? It's like, obviously we're all too young to have gone and seen, you know, Star Wars in the theaters. None of us were born when Star Wars first hit the theaters right. In 1977. So like I get this feeling that when I'm watching this film, that it's that moment where I'm watching a new sci-fi epic for the first time, and I'm part of that generation getting to see it for the first time, and I feel like it's that important. I feel like it is this generation's Star Wars.
No, I'm right there with you, because I mean, like, yeah, of course none of us are old enough to have seen it when it first came out, but like being shown that the VHS tape when I was a little kid, it was that same feeling I got. Honestly, this felt more like a Star Wars movie than any of the actual Star Wars movies we've gotten within my lifetime.
Only with better science.
I'm entirely positive about this movie. It's not, I have like my little nitpicks and stuff. The biggest one being that the world that we saw was so big, and that was like the best part for me. But it was also kind of the worst part for me in that I'm not super familiar with the cosmic Marvel universe, and I'm fairly certain most of the audience wasn't either. So I didn't really feel Ronan the Accuser's motivation. Like, I don't really know what the Kree's deal is and why he was so much of a zealot about it, because I don't know why they do what they do. So he just seemed to be saying rhetoric, but it was like meaningless rhetoric. So that kind of was like, eh. That's the closest I have to a complaint.
I think that's what they had to do. It's, I mean, frankly, like they had to, you know, take liberties a little bit with the cosmic universe in general, because while Ronan the Accuser was introduced in the comics as a more villainous figure, like they've kind of softened him up over the decades, and like at one point in the comics, Star Lord was actually working for Ronan the Accuser.
No, I understand that. I just wish, I don't know what the Kree's deal is. The only thing I know about the Kree is that they are blue and they had something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this last season. And I'm willing to bet that there were a lot of other moviegoers who were completely confused by that.
Yeah, but I read Marvel Comics for decades, and that's literally all I know about the Kree.
Okay, well then, okay, so there is nothing. Okay, then
you have to understand the Marvel Universe is just so big that, you know, it's like, this is the side of the universe I don't know a lot about.
No, there's, for example, I mean, like, there's, At the risk of spoilers for people who have seen the movie and stuff, because they're obviously going to go somewhere else with it in the movies, because they made a huge deal about it in the movies about Peter's dad, but I was having this discussion with my girlfriend this morning about what's the significance of Star-Lord's father and that whole thing, and really there isn't much. Because the Marvel universe is so big that it's literally just like, there's so many different alien races and whatnot that it's just like, oh, okay.
Well, he is literally a prince, which is why I laughed at the Star Prince joke.
Yeah. They kept that.
But I mean, like there was a question of, well, what's so significant about the Spartoi? And it's like, there really isn't anything significant about them. So.
Well, I think it's the important thing is what they wanted to do was have a bad guy who was part of the alien race. You know, and I thought they explained Ronan's motivations pretty well, where it was pretty clear that the Kree had been at war with the Nova Empire, and that that they had signed a treaty, and that he was a zealot who was angry that they had signed a treaty and ended the war.
Well, no. I mean,
it's a trope, but it's, you know.
when he starts going on about how this is your redemption and stuff, my brain started going, is this like a religious thing? Is it a, like, where is he coming from with this?
Well, he has to say stuff like that so he can say, I accuse you. So he can be Ronan the Accuser.
So it really is just incredibly shallow. This is just proving what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's
because Thanos is the real bad guy.
Yeah, like I said, this is the closest thing I have to a nitpick, though. So I'm gonna ask questions. I do that with every movie.
That's how
I do movies.
Well, it's like Darth Vader really doesn't have a whole lot of motivation throughout the entire Star Wars franchise.
Darth Vader is literally the mook.
Yeah.
No, that's also true, which is kind of part of why the prequels don't work, because they make Darth Vader, who is just a mook, out to be so much more than he actually is. But that, I guess, going back to my earlier point, this movie felt more like Star Wars than Star Wars to me.
Only Luke was also Han Solo.
You know what? Whatever. I'm fine with that.
So am I.
The biggest point, though, that I need to say of where this movie shined for me, the soundtrack. I think this is the best soundtrack that any of these movies has had.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's all that 70s and 80s pop, but there are ways of using pop music in movies. One way or another, it's going to date the movie. The question is, do you want it to date the movie in a way that it expresses who the characters are and what they're going through, or do you want it to date the movie in a way like Shrek, where if you watch it 10 years later, it sucks now because, you know.
Hey, whoa.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoa. Hey,
fans.
All Star is going to be a classic song 30 years from now, Nick.
Hey, All Star is a great song because it was written for Mystery Men.
Yeah, was but it?
All Star, I don't know if it was written for Mystery Men, but it was originally featured on the Mystery Men soundtrack. The music video for All Star features footage from Mystery Men and additional footage shot with the Mystery Men cast for the music video. What it got in Shrek, because they were using it as the test audio over the scene, and they decided they liked it so much they paid for the rights. And because Shrek was the more successful movie, that's what people remember it from now, but Mystery Men is what that song is from.
Yeah, but in the late 90s, every comedy movie was required to play All Star at least once. I can think of a couple others that also used that song, which is also neither here nor there.
It's like how every romantic comedy was required to play that, like, nine day, whatever, the Sixpence None the Richer song, which had four music videos, including a Dawson's Creek variation.
How have we gotten so off? No, really.
Well, soundtracks.
Back to Guardians of the Galaxy, though. The opening credits of this movie are...
With Come and Get Your Love?
Yeah, with Come Get Your Love. With the dancing ruins. With singing into the possum monsters. And kicking the possum monsters.
I would have called them rat monsters.
That's the fun I've had during opening credits of a movie.
It was great.
It was great, and especially because we just got that, like, absolutely gut punch of an open.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit!
I was
that whole thing.
I'm looking forward to seeing this movie with friends who haven't seen it yet, so I can. So during I'm going through my tears of watching Mrs. Quill die, I can just be like, "Don't worry, the movie actually is funny."
Well, you know, so I'm glad that so in Star-Lord's original origin, his mom gets killed by an alien.
Yeah, because they're looking to kill the offspring of Jason, the Emperor of Spartoi.
Yeah, so that's why I'm actually, like, really happy that they just gave her a natural death.
No, same. That's, like, the biggest cliche in the book is to want to Spider-Man-ize everything.
Well, especially since Drax's wife and kid were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Gamora's parents were murdered.
Well, you know, James Gunn was the director was saying this. You never see movies about a mother and son. Like, you see a lot of movies that explore the father-son relationship, even the father-daughter relationship, but movies about the mother-son relationship, you don't get that very much. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I thought that was really strong, and I cannot say enough how much I liked every character in this movie, because all of them were characters. They
yeah.
had depth, they had dreams, they had backgrounds. I went into the movie thinking I would like Rocket Raccoon, but then I liked him for reasons completely different than I thought I would like him for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I need his
so
eye.
Much going on with this.
I like Rocket Raccoon's desire to just, like, try to get extra stuff. Like, the scene where for Rocket's plan, he says he needs the guy's leg, and Peter Quill goes through all that effort to get the leg. And
I just thought it'd be funny.
Is he hopping around?
Well, there's I think the moment that I knew that I was in for one of the best movies, like, honestly, in my opinion, is that this is the best Marvel movie so far. Like,
I'll go out and say that. I'll put this at least on, I'll say at least ties my previous favorite, so, you know, I can agree with it being the best.
Yeah. The minute I knew that it was going to be incredible, not even the heart-punching opening scene, the opening credits, which were phenomenal, but still not the best, was when they're on Xandar, where they all meet each other for the first time, and it's just this ridiculous, we are watching a tree and a raccoon fighting Chris Pratt, and
yeah, well, can I also
Zoe
say that
Saldana painted green, and
then Green Uhura shows up, yeah,
yeah, well, and Stan Lee got his cameo because apparently they all remembered that he created Groot.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it's. It was one of those things where it's like, I've never seen this in a movie before, and this is incredibly fun.
Oh, yeah, no. It was...
I'm not going to go... I really don't want to go so far as to say it's the best Marvel movie so far, but I don't... I almost feel it's unfair to compare this one to the other Marvel movies. It's just too different.
You could compare it in parts to some of the Thor films.
I guess you could see that, but I mean, like, in our Godzilla episode, we all agreed that comparing Pacific Rim to Godzilla was unfair, and I feel that this has about as much similarity as that does to those.
Yeah, I think that Thor's the closest to get, only in the sense that it is, you know, a cosmic, you know, an alien story set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's true that the way that the Asgardians travel straight from planet to planet without any of, like, the interstellar stuff, really, it's a space opera, which we've never done before. We've done kind of the Thor movies are the closest, but they're not space opera. They're still they're not really straight superhero films. They're kind of
actiony.
The Thor films border between superhero and fantasy film. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to even qualify how well the Marvel movies have actually been superhero films. Like, Captain America Winter Soldier was a spy movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was through and through a spy movie.
Yeah, but I'll say that the first Captain America film was a classic World War II superhero story.
Yeah.
Straight out of the comics. It's, you know, like, that felt to me like the old, like, you know, Howling Commandos stuff. It's, you know.
It's the closest we're ever going to get to a modern version of Christopher Reeve Superman. That's what I would say.
Yeah, it's, but
I mean,
I'll,
that way.
Yeah. I'll say the first Iron Man film I felt was a little non-traditional, but it was a clear superhero movie.
Right.
All
the Iron Man movies are pretty clearly in that genre, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think the Hulk film even still felt like as much a superhero film as any Hulk film feels. It was significantly more superhero-ish than any previous Hulk film.
But it wasn't any more memorable. Oh.
No. Well,
you know, I will defend The Incredible Hulk until the day I die. I really enjoyed Ed Norton as, and I think Mark Ruffalo is the better Bruce Banner. And I'm glad they did that recast. But I really thoroughly enjoyed The Incredible Hulk.
I enjoyed it, but it also didn't, like, it felt like I was watching the same thing. And maybe it's because I grew up watching the Incredible Hulk TV series where it was the same thing every episode.
I liked it when I saw it. I just, it's not a memorable movie. I can't.
Well, people forget that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people legitimately forget that it was a film.
And it's part of the MCU.
Yeah.
I don't know. But let's see. Back to Guardians of the Galaxy, because that's what this episode is really about.
Or is it?
Maybe it's just us to get together, you know, an excuse for a week to get together and keep talking. But
we're all lonely.
It's true.
But I just let's go over some of the minor details of it. I mean, we all agree that it's a phenomenal movie. Me and Trey and I both agree that it's probably. Pretty darn – I say it's the best Marvel movie so far. Trey's pretty close to that
point. Well, I'll say it's my favorite. I don't – you know, it's I'm gonna throw back a little and say I don't know if it's the best because it's too recent in my mind, but it is my favorite.
Okay, maybe I'll go with that. But I still
– So, like, yeah, it looks a little too soon to
– I don't know. If I could – if when I see it, I'll see it again probably.
You have to remember, the day after I watched Man of Steel, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, same.
So,
and you know what? I will say that with Man of Steel, just to not talk about Man of Steel too much, but say actually, I will say that I still liked it as a movie to go see. So I'll stand behind that. But as a film, it's Superman film. It's bad.
So, but Nick is sort of in the same mindset. Correct, Nick, that it's up there, but probably not the best at this point.
It's definitely right up there. It's within my top three, I would say. But it's also way too soon because, like, I've had several times and right after a movie I will think something is really good, and then sometimes I will go back. Like, now it's not nearly as bad of a case, but I remember when I left Dark Knight Rises, I thought that was pretty good, and now I hate that movie.
Oh, I don't know why you hate that movie. I like that movie with caveats.
I there's a lot of things in that one. This is a movie that I'm never going to hate. I can say that much. There wasn't anything that bothered me.
And Nick hates everything, including things he loves.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's just a fact.
Just get him to talk about Doctor Who for 5 minutes, and you won't have any idea what the hell's going on.
Well, that's just a fact, is that I hate absolutely everything, and I think that the fans, and especially the people who show up to conventions and see my panels, know that I especially hate the things I do panels on. That's just that's just how it is.
So, let's talk about some of the minor or the individual things within the movie. I want to start off by saying that I was a huge fan of the fan service for everybody approach that this movie took. And we kind of saw that they weren't going to emphasize, you know, like we weren't going to get your stereotypical the women characters are there to be eye candy and to provide a romantic role for the male. We saw that with the poster coming out where we don't have Zoe Saldana in a body contorting position to show off as much butt as we possibly can. But it was there in the movie and I thought it was so spread throughout. I mean, where it's like, okay, fine, like one shot had, you know, when they were all getting their costumes on or the suits on. Yeah, okay, we get a shot of Gamora's backside in the leather pants. But then it turns around, we get a shot of Star-Lord's backside in the same leather pants as well.
Well, and we got plenty of shots of Chris Pratt's abs.
And I love that they did the orange goop to like show the definition. Like, it could have been anything else, but we went with the orange goop so that you got to see the contours of his abs perfectly.
What I did notice is that a lot of stuff that we saw in the trailers wasn't actually in the film.
No, especially
there was a lot of that.
the big speech, we actually did get to see Star-Lord's middle finger show up, which I don't know if I feel that I feel like it was funnier to have it blocked out.
I thought it was funnier to have it blocked out.
Yeah, I also thought it was funnier to have it blocked out.
But I suppose they had to do that for the trailer. And then we don't really get to hear John, you know, like we still get to hear what a bunch of a-holes, but we don't get to hear the, you know, they call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Because they weren't calling themselves that yet.
No.
And Ronan also Drax is, yeah, and Drax is not in that scene the way he is in the trailer. Because right. He hasn't joined them yet.
Yep.
But which means they shot that footage of Drax. Yeah, which is funny that the first still we got from Guardians of the Galaxy was that lineup shot, and that's not actually in the film.
Well, you had to show all the characters in it, of course.
No, it's... Oh, I know, it's here. I thought it was a smart move for the trailer. I just think it's funny that the first, like, it was like the first still from Guardians of the Galaxy that went out is a still that's not actually... It's a still from the trailer. It's not a still from the film. Yeah. And also, Groot hitting play on the tape deck didn't happen, which made me sad.
No. Go ahead, Nick. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, if we're going to get into some other minor stuff that we really liked, I really liked the fact that there were spaceships that had interesting designs that I will actually remember after seeing the movie. Because I am so sick of bland spaceships.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the design of this movie, because that's something that was huge. The spaceships, the aliens that were in this.
The worlds that they went to, the everything had a really interesting and cool design to it.
Everything was unique, and I thought that was something that I haven't seen in a sci-fi movie in a very long time, because you tend to get... And I mean, you know, this movie had these are humanoid aliens that are green. These are humanoid aliens that are blue. But there was such a huge variety of different aliens. I think that no matter how many times I see this, I think I would, looking in a crowd, I would see something new each time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's I loved the inclusion of so first off, with the collector, they were going to sell the collector a second Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
The collector already has an Infinity Stone.
Well, he wanted to complete the collection.
Yeah, I know. But can I also point out Howard the Duck?
Yes.
Yes, let's yeah.
That was apparently that was Seth Green.
No, that was Fillion's cameo.
What?
Was that?
I'm interneting this.
I'm pretty sure that was Fillion's cameo.
I don't know. I'm looking this up. It didn't sound like Fillion to me, so I'm gonna. Let's take a look here.
Toplessrobot.com is saying it was Seth Green.
Oh, okay. Well, then I stand corrected. But then where was Nathan Fillion in the movie? Because
they said it was like 9 seconds over audio, so like you never saw him on. So it could have been one of the random voices over the the radios during the big battle or something, or at the prison, or
that could have been it.
I couldn't find the Nathan Fillion cameo, but I'm sure that in retrospect I will see it. And let's see here. See full cast.
But the Howard the Duck cameo, that was the most I did see one of my favorite.
Seth Green is Howard the Duck.
My favorite post that I saw about that was like, man, that was the longest trailer for Howard the Duck 2 Electric Boogaloo I've ever seen.
Well, you know, people don't remember that Howard, you know, it's non-comics people don't remember that Howard the Duck was a Marvel Comics character, or that is a Marvel Comics character.
And he actually has a pretty big role in stuff right now, doesn't he?
I don't know about right now. Historically, he actually has. Like, anytime there was, like, Secret Wars or, like, anything like that, like, he showed up in those big events.
Like, yeah, he was in stuff as recent as I know. I remember him in Civil War for a little bit in one of those.
Yeah, no, he's from a planet that is identical to Earth, only populated by humanoid ducks. That is, there is literally a planet in the Marvel, cosmic universe just full of duck people like Howard.
Do you think we're going to get a second Howard the Duck movie now that...
Well, it would be a first one because the Howard the Duck movie that came out that was produced by Lucas and all that stuff, that film doesn't really... it abandoned a lot of Howard the Duck. It just took the premise and tried to recreate that. Howard's personality was very different in that.
Yeah, the original creator absolutely hates that movie.
So does just about everybody else.
Yeah. It's but like Howard the Duck's got a whole cast of characters including like Destroyer Duck and stuff like that, and that's also like crossed over with other stuff. Like there's so much Howard the Duck.
Well, there were just a lot of Marvel characters in this movie in general.
Like Cosmo the Space Dog.
Cosmo the Space Dog!
Space Dog was in it. I thought I saw Galactus in there.
I don't know if they'd be able to technically get away with Galactus because he's tied closely to the Fantastic Four.
But he was there. They had him using the Infinity Gem. Was that not Galactus? I
figured it was the same race of beings that the Nowhere was, but not necessarily Galactus.
Okay, that's fair. Because like I was like, oh, he's dressed up similarly. All to right, Galactus
so it's and... yeah, because Nowhere is located in the decapitated head of an unidentified celestial, and the celestials are as I use websites, Yeah, let's see here. Is Galactus a celestial?
Ask Jeeves, is Galactus a celestial?
Does Ask Jeeves even exist anymore?
I don't know, but I sure hope it does.
I don't know if Galactus is a celestial. Let me take a look. Galactus.
Because I could have, like, once... Because I was trying to play Spot the Marvel character... And when that scene happened, I'm like, oh, hey, they somehow got to use Galactus?
No. I don't think Galactus is a celestial.
So it's entirely possible that they somehow managed to get the rights to Galactus for this.
Well, okay, so when you get minor characters like that who cross over with a bunch of stuff, their rights are probably open for many people. It's like how Quicksilver can show up in both an X-Men movie and an Avengers film. There's probably crossover on some of the villains because, you know, almost all of them have fought. But it, you know, Fox may have the rights to Galactus. They may have just thrown that in there and by not naming him not violate the contract with Fox. Because with Silver Surfer is also his rights are owned by Fox, which is why they were able to with Fantastic Four stuff and like, you know, because like the second Fantastic Four movie in Fox's first Fantastic Four movies, that second one was more a Silver Surfer movie than a Fantastic Four movie.
Well, it's kind of like why they're saying Chitauri instead of Skrull in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because the actual name Skrull is tied with the Fantastic Four license. But you call them the Chitauri, and you're fine. Because that was the Ultimates name for them.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You know what? How bad is it that I didn't realize that the Skrulls and the Chitauri were the same race?
According to the Ultimates universe, yeah. Now, granted, the movie Chitauri also haven't been seen shape-shifting, so... Maybe they can, maybe they can't.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Chitauri were the Ultimates version of the Skrulls. Yay, Ultimate Marvel, you're mostly awful.
Another thing I loved about the Guardians of the Galaxy's movie, Guardians of the Galaxy movie, I mean, it kept that lightheartedness throughout, but it still managed to build characters. It still managed to tie in, you know, it still managed to have some pretty hard hitting stuff.
By the way, I have to clear something up that Nick said. Later, Marvel would choose to distinguish between the Skrulls and the Chitauri in the Ultimate Universe, where the Chitauri took the place of the Skrulls in a lot of the continuity, where they effectively acted in the place where the Skrulls had. They are the Ultimates did introduce the Skrulls separately.
So, okay.
So it's that's so what they're doing in the movie universe is using the Chitauri in place of the Skrulls because of their, you know, spot in probably the Marvel stuff in the Fantastic Four stuff. But yeah. There we go. That's... Thanks, Wikipedia.
Huzzah! Internet is our friend. I do want to say that, that pelvic sorcery is one of my new favorite phrases. That whole scene was glorious.
Our great hero, Kevin Bacon.
We are just like Kevin Bacon. The pop culture references, the Earth pop culture references in this movie were glorious, and it's stuff that's gonna stick around. It's not just like a dumb one off joke. Like it's reference. You know, you can make that reference 20 years from now, and people are still gonna get it.
And you know that his references are all dated to like the late '80s because that's when he left Earth. So you know,
but once again, that serves to make the character better. It's not just a reference that isn't gonna be relevant. You know. A year from now.
Right. Well, you know, but if you watch like Farscape, you know, John Crichton's references never feel dated. Even, you know, it's been 10 years in his like because, you know, the Farscape series, John Crichton makes lots of pop culture references to Earth in kind of the same context as, you know, Chris Pratt's character. And his references don't feel dated only because he only chooses to like use like he'll make a reference to like Klingons or something, you know, like something that was significant enough to last for like 30 years as a cultural reference already.
Right.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, like referencing Footloose, it makes perfect sense because, I mean, first off, that's how long he is. But they also know that since all of his references are from the 80s, that, you know, all of his references are going to be 20 years old. You know which ones don't feel dated to make. Because they're the references we still make.
That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with that. It's because it's really easy. This is why doing modern references in movies never works, because you don't know what's going to still be relevant. You know, a year from now, and I'm sure every movie that has decided to make a joke about Friday is regretting that now. Just throwing like as a random example, because no one's going to give a crap about that. No one gives a crap about it.
You mean the Rebecca Black song and not the, you know, cinematic classic, right?
Yeah, the Rebecca Black song. Yes,
because the film, I will argue, actually is, you know, culturally important, not necessarily so for, you know, white guys from Janesville, but still.
Wait, Nick's a white guy from Janesville?
What's your problem with white? Janesville is, by the way, incidentally, we're going to bring up Janesville. I want to give you guys an idea of what an uncivilized hellhole I live in. there were no early screenings of Guardians of the Galaxy in this town. I went to the theaters. I'm like, oh, hey, is there a midnight showing? They're like, oh, no, Marvel hasn't been doing midnight showings. They've been doing like 7, sometimes 8 or 9. Oh, I'm like, oh, are we doing those? He's like, nope, we don't have any early screenings. What?
Bastards.
Incredible.
I have no idea if there were early screenings where I live, because I was like intentionally waiting to go see it at a drive-in movie theater, because first off, the biggest screen I can find in my area is the drive-in, so hell yes, I'm gonna go see that on the biggest like eye-filling screen I can. So there were two drive-ins showing it, and equidistant from my house. One of them was the good drive-in, and the other one was kind of the dirt drive-in, the crappy one. The crappy one showed Guardians of the Galaxy first movie. The good drive-in showed its second movie after Planes. Now, I knew that the good drive-in has a bigger screen and a brighter projector, so I sat through Planes 2 to see this movie.
You poor, poor man.
What? And it was worth sitting through Planes 2 to see it on that screen. And also, I got like $20 first worth of free concessions because I go to this drive-in enough where the owners recognized me and they were nice and gave me $20 worth of free concessions.
I don't know if that's awesome or sad.
It's awesome.
Keep telling yourself that.
My wife and I like to go to the drive-in movie theater during the summer. That's awesome. Shut up.
See where you can.
Moving on. Oh, but speaking of theaters, have you seen the news reports that at least two theaters that showed when they tried
Legends of the Guardians,
Rise of the Guardians,
about
Legends of the Guardians, the Zack Snyder film, no, Rise of the Guardians, the one with the holiday characters, and the best part is they didn't show Rise of the Guardians once, but they went through the trailers and then Rise of the Guardians came on and then obviously people freaked out. It was like three times in a row that these people had to sit through the trailers at the beginning of Rise of the Guardians before, like, all of them just finally gave up. And the movie theater, to their credit, gave them, their money back and a free poster and tickets to go see a later showing. But, oh my God.
Well, I guess from my understanding, what happens is this theater showed the Holiday Guardians
Rise
movie.
Of the Guardians.
Rise of the Guardians. They had shown that earlier as like a Saturday morning kids special, which a lot of theaters will have. And somebody just put the Guardians label as the file name in the hard drive.
Yeah.
And so they just kept clicking that one and not the Guardians of the Galaxy one.
What I love is that it wasn't just one theater, but like a completely unrelated theater in New Jersey also did this.
That's
theaters.
I feel awful because I feel bad for those people, but I also think it's hilarious. And
oh yeah, no, it's funny as hell.
Gentlemen, what do we think?
Are you
Sorry
yawning?
About that. Wow, a little bit.
Are we boring you?
I woke up a little early today. what do we think is are the greater implications of this movie to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Well, it shows Thanos' continued attempt to acquire the Infinity Stones.
Which he has none so far, if I'm correct.
I know. So, like, he's going to just grab them all at once.
Yeah, he's not good at the fighting these at all.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, all of these characters in the cosmic universe are well aware of who Thanos is. Like, he has a name. Which means, and they still call him the most powerful being in the universe. So, I mean, when he finally gets his movie, are we going to get to see him storm around all these places where we know the Infinity Stones are and just, like, total them even before he has one? Because I'm almost...
I just have this picture of a sequence where Thanos just walks into places, punches the guy, and grabs the stone, walks out. Like... Here he comes, walks into Novacore, punches a dude, grabs a stone. There we go, walk into the collector's place, Benicio del Toro gets punched in the face, grabs it, leaves. There he goes, walks into Asgard, punches the Loki Odin in the face, grabs the stone, leaves. Like, maybe he'll kick Loki Odin in the balls, too, after, completely failing.
I liked it better when he was the Loki Odin.
The Loki Odin.
The Loki Odin. The Loki Odin.
It'll be a beautiful montage, and Hooked on a Feeling will be playing over it the whole time.
I don't know. I feel like a different song would be more appropriate. Let me think here. What's the best song for a Thanos punching people and grabbing stuff sequence that you can think of?
Don't mess around.
All Star. Hey,
yes.
Now, you're an All Star. Get your game on. Go play.
Punch. Okay. Punch.
Yes. And that's Avengers 3. That's how Avengers 3 will open.
Yep, it'll open with the montage. You know what? People can skip the first 15 minutes of the Avengers 3 because we just described it for
them.
Well,
and all the punches will be in slow-mo, so like John C. Reilly at NovaCorp, you just get a slow-mo of Thanos punching him in the face while he like slow motion flies sideways through the air.
They'll use the Zack Snyder school of filming. Like it'll be Thanos throwing the punch, and as soon as he connects, it'll slow down.
No, I was thinking more the Guy Ritchie, but whatever, like in Snatch, but because I was thinking of a good director. Unless, of course, Legends of the Guardians is what you're talking about, and Zack Snyder did a great job with that.
Yeah, that's like the only movie he did that I don't.
Man, the Guardians movie series is really weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
nothing follows you. I mean, for some reason, Ashton Kutcher and Dennis Quaid were in one together. I don't.
Well, I think the leap to animation and then going back to live action was weird. I would have liked to have known more about how the owls relate to Jack Frost, but that's me. I don't know. I don't get it.
Jack Frost is composed of owls.
Okay.
That's how it works. There we go. I fixed it. Jack Frost is really Star-Lord's father.
Ah, don't say that. The Tumblr people are annoying enough. I'm sorry. Rise of the Guardians has the worst Tumblr fandom. It is. Just face it.
I didn't know that it did. Why are you going to those parts of Tumblr? That's like going to the Man of Steel tag.
Friends, we follow some people that are part of it.
I was going to say, like, this is why you don't go to the Man of Steel tag. You get that one guy.
Well, once again, remember
that
the
one
Man
guy
of
who's got some weird... Okay, so there is this one guy who, if you post anything negative about Man of Steel, will, like, jump all over you and say weird stuff and then claim you're obsessing over it if you ever respond. And he'll go to your blog and make a bunch of comments under a different name, except, dude, your IP address links back to who you are, and I was able to find your Facebook page, and that's you. And I know where your mom lives. I know where your mom lives.
This got weird.
I do. I know where his mom lives.
You know, one of these days we're going to have a movie review special where we actually talk about the movie.
Well, okay, so we've been talking about the movie.
So, can I also say the one character and actress I guess we haven't really mentioned yet, Karen Gillan rocked as Nebula.
Yes, I loved Blue Pond.
Nebula actually had character development that went beyond the state of her uterus. Let's be fair.
Nick's got a point. I actually like this character more than I liked Amy Pond.
Well, that's fine because she's a villain and villains are inherently more interesting.
Yeah, except for the fact that the Guardians themselves were honestly all collectively the most interesting characters in the movie.
Right, and they were all outlaws, which means that they got villained up a little bit.
They were anti-heroes.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Boom, there goes the theory right in Nick's face. All over it. It's sprinkling down.
Some of them are overtly villainous, though.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. But they were all chaotic good.
I love Groot.
Am Groot.
We are Groot.
The only
like that somebody already gifted the dancing baby Groot.
I hated that because it spoiled it for me.
Well, then why did you look at it?
Because it was in my Tumblr feed and some asshole I follow reblogged it.
Well, it wasn't me. I only posted it to Facebook and I was like, oh, well, don't look at this if you haven't seen the movie yet.
Yeah, well, it...
I try not to post spoilers for things in general.
Well, some of our friends are jerks.
And they should be ashamed of themselves.
Oh, it could have been someone I follow who you don't know.
Other quick... other quick notes about the movie, things that were good. The dance off
attempt was great. I love dance Ronan's off. Confusion.
What like, are you doing? That, distracting like, you, idiot.
Yeah. Like, that was so brilliant. Okay, I also love, and this is just me as a science fiction fan, that it's a little thing that always, always, always gets me when they do this right. Since the massive spaceship battle happened in the upper atmosphere, sound was justified.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they did that in this. They did that in Serenity, which, I mean, there was still sound and space stuff in the space scenes, but, you know, at least the big scene, you could justify the stuff. And so I like that. I'm always a big fan.
What I was saying earlier about Rocket Raccoon, about how I ended up liking him for different reasons than I expected to, I went into the movie expecting to like Rocket just because he was a foul-mouthed, gun-toting raccoon. But the whole
aspect... Which are pretty good reasons.
Yeah, which is a pretty awesome reason to like a character, if I do say so myself. But then the whole... His background from being the result of an experiment and how sensitive he actually is about that, eventually sensitive he becomes to the wants and needs of his newly found friends, that's what really made the character click with me. Like,
yeah,
at the end with him crying over the bits of Groot, and when Drax goes over to pet him, that was what completed that character for me.
Well, that and Rocket Raccoon's just adorable because he's a raccoon.
Yeah, both Rocket and Groot, and honestly, all the characters are adorable in their own way.
Especially baby Groot at the end, dancing to the music and stopping whenever Drax looked at him.
Also, that's another thing. I didn't even think I would like Dave Bautista in any kind of movie, but he just killed it as Drax.
Nothing will goes over
by
my
the way,
head.
By
I
the way, this is what I want from our listeners. Our listeners with good photoshopping abilities, and Trey, maybe you'll take care of this for me. I want a picture of the main lead from The Fault in Our Stars, but somebody put Drax's head on his body and say it's a metaphor. that's all I want. Like, that's.
I'm not going to step up for that one. Someone else can.
Someone's got to do that, because that's all I can think of. Like, that was the biggest laugh. Like, I was the loudest laugh in the theater on that one, just because that's all I could think of was the it's a metaphor joke. We got with The Fault in Our Stars, and then just, yeah. So
John Green this shit.
Yep. Because, you know, Drax is the killing thing, and no matter what you do, you can't give the killing thing power to not kill you. I think we all like the movie. I think we all agree that people should see it. But there's other things coming out regarding Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
In the very near future, of course, the first thing that's going to be coming out is the animated series, which is going to be airing on Disney XD. We don't have a release date on that yet, but they do have footage done.
Is that going to be in the same universe as Agents of Smash? Because Star-Lord's shown up in their current cartoons.
He's shown up in episodes of Ultimate Spider-Man, too. Not that anyone should be watching Ultimate Spider-Man.
Wait, why do you know that?
Because I was looking up animated clips from Guardians of the Galaxy the other day.
But Chris Cox has voiced him in both Ultimate Spider-Man and Agents of Smash. So, dollars to donuts.
Star-Lord. He was awesome.
Star-Lord? I didn't hear you.
Steve Bloom, Star-Lord.
Ah.
Spike from Cowboy Bebop. Really?
That seems fitting.
It was awesome.
Steve Bloom as Star-Lord is the most fitting voice actor I can think of for that role.
I never watched the dub of Cowboy Bebop, so I can't make a comment.
Basically, he's
Star-Lord. God, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Well, I watched the dub. I meant the subtitled version.
Well, fix that.
Why?
It's a good dub.
Because it's like the best dub ever. Even Yoko Kano said so.
I've got nothing against the dub. I've never heard it, but the original Japanese cast was so good.
But
anyways.
As well as the animated series, even before the first movie was announced at Comic-Con on Saturday, James Gunn announced that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is being written. He's writing it. He's directing it. I think he's still co-writing it with why can I not find her name? Nicole Perlman, who, by the way, is the first time a Marvel movie has had a female lead writer on a movie was for Guardians of the Galaxy. So good job, Marvel. Nicole Perlman, I believe, is helping him co-write it. And it is going to be out July 2017 is the plan.
So I know what I'm going to be doing. July 2017.
Mark your calendars. I'm excited. We're gonna see all sorts of. I hope that it keeps up with the same atmosphere of the first movie, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah,
I'm glad they're taking their time on it, not rushing something out.
Indeed, no. The fact that they've got 3 years to get it done, that's good.
Indeed.
So. Thank you all for joining us for this special Guardians of the Galaxy review episode where we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy for at least half the time. but of course, a reminder that we will be back next week with a new your usual nerd and tie shenanigans. And in 3 weeks, we will be at Madison.
At GeekCon, where we're going to be doing a live show at 6 p.m. on Friday, I believe.
Yeah.
It will be amazing.
I think that's what
this is. Which
nice they gave us an actual time because the plan was just to set up in the hotel bar and just have at it.
Yeah, yeah. Which would have been maybe more entertaining, but fewer of you could have fit in there. So we like having a venue because we like getting as many of you in the room as possible when we record these live. And remember, you can always subscribe to Nerd and Tie through Stitcher by going to Stitcher.com and follow the link on our website to it directly to the Nerd and Tie feed. And you can use their iOS or Android app to listen to the show, or you can subscribe to us through iTunes on iOS. And please rate and review us because we need your feedback. We love hearing about what you think about us because we are vain egomaniacs.
And as always, feel free to write to us at any point. Go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and send us your thoughts. Nick?
Yes.
Also send us money.
I have a Patreon account. I'm just saying.
Anyway, time to take this thing home. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I am Nick Izumi.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Monkey Banana Pants Robot.
Keep on spawning the free world.